Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Two stories St. Louis Public Radio's covered this week told of two different communities responding to the presidential campaign's highly charged political rhetoric and, of course, the election result. Nancy Fowler wrote of concerns among some in the LGBT community. Diversity fellow Jenny Simone covered swearing-in ceremonies for brand-new U.S. citizens. Members of each group are looking ahead somewhat differently following the election. Jenny and Nancy join me in studio. Thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Nice to be here.
Let's start this way, and I'll start with you, Nancy. Give me just a general idea of how people in the LGBT community are responding to the rhetoric and the election result.
Well, there is a lot of fear, and there's a lot of concern, and there are a lot of questions. And there have been increased incidents of that seem to be directly stemming from the election. I'll talk about one of those in a minute, but it involved a woman almost being hit by a truck, and another had some really hateful things said about her on Facebook. But it's not just, I know it's a lot of anecdotes, but it also is borne out by new statistics from the Southern Poverty Law Center that these kinds of incidents for all minority and oppressed groups are increasing in the 2 weeks after the election.
It's always dangerous to generalize, but I guess we can say with some certainty that most people in this group probably feel this way.
I mean, you know, I haven't done a survey, but I'm, sure. You know, just looking at Facebook, talking with people, there is a lot of concern. Yeah. And there has, but it always been, but it's been ramped up.
Right. Jenny, let me turn to you, a much different kind of group that you interacted with within the last couple of days. Tell me your impressions of the conversations you had.
Sure. So I'm going to agree with Nancy that there's a lot of anxiety going on in the immigrant community. Mm-hmm. I mean, the story I did this week, I was talking to new citizens being sworn in at the International Institute. And obviously with their citizenship, there's a lot less nervous anxiety going on because you are a citizen. You don't have to worry about being deported or having refugee policies change or something like that. So these people are feeling more secure. But I do think we talk about immigrants as a monolith and as if they all experience things the same way. And it's just not the case. Like, you have a full swath, the same way that the general populace feels about the election. I mean,
sure.
You can see those reflected within the immigrant population here, too.
And, of course, as you've indicated, when you were having these conversations, it's a very exciting time for them.
I think the feeling of
patriotism must be at probably its highest level at this point.
Holy Toledo. Yeah, all of these folks were just, like, beaming. And, you know, it's really funny when you approach somebody to be like, are you feeling anxious? Or, like, you want to find out if there's any anxiety there, and people are just like, nah, I'm a citizen now. Like, I am so pumped, and I'm going to go celebrate with my family and, like, live this awesome life I have.
Well, as you've said, they feel protected by their citizenship, their new citizenship.
Totally.
Nancy, I wonder if people in the LGBT community feel protected by the law.
Often not. And again, I want to echo what Jenny said, too. This is not a monolith.
Of course. We understand that.
Right. Yeah. But I think it's also important to even different parts of the LGBT community are more afraid than others. I think trans people have, very distinct, specific reasons to live in fear, and that has ramped up because of the rhetoric toward them. But do they feel protected by the law? In Missouri, we do not have a law that protects people, LGBT people, from being fired or denied housing. That has been a bill for 16 years. They worry about, you know, its chances, which, you know, have been improving. It did pass the Senate a few years ago. They worry about, you know, that, you know, going back in the back burner. They don't have the laws that they can, you know, be secure about being protected by, and even those laws that do exist, which really aren't specifically toward the LGBT community, but even threats against, you know, harassment laws and things like that, they're just being, like, blown right through in many cases. So.
But there are federal hate crime laws.
There are federal hate crime laws, but they do not cover the LGBT community. They do not cover gender identity, nor do they cover sexual orientation. That is something that has not happened. So really, a class of people who are generally unprotected in many ways. There are states, I believe Illinois is one of them, that will protect you in employment and housing, but it's a patchwork system.
Jenny, any indication from the people that you talked to that they had suffered any kind of harassment during the political campaign because of the rhetoric?
Totally, 100%. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot, especially within the Muslim and refugee community, not that they are equivalent, but and also in the Latino community, a lot of folks mentioning harassment directly after the election and a little bit before. I think it's a shame. A lot of it is verbal, and it's really hard to, especially if you're undocumented, to know where to go with that information. So a lot of these things go underreported, even if anecdotally they're flying around everywhere. People are talking about that anxiety, and it's everything from having Trump's name keyed into your car door to feeling like when you walk into a store that everyone's looking at you because you are Mexican. Like, I think it's a full range of how people are like trying to navigate those spaces and feeling unsafe.
Go ahead, Nancy.
I think sometimes it is rare for people to have experienced these things to want to talk about them. They're afraid of more or retribution when they do talk about them. 100%. I found. Have you found that?
Yeah, totally. And I think especially for undocumented folks, it is so hard to know, like, oh, if I go to the police, are they going to start looking into my background and deport me? Like, it's just, it's a tough way to live.
Particularly coming from some of the places that they have come from, where even though they were citizens there, the law was not always protective.
Well, sure. And I've talked to people. I talked to one woman who is a citizen now, but she came as a refugee from Afghanistan. And she, the way that she talked about it was like, I've experienced war my entire life. And that almost, because it was so such a contrast from what she's found in the U.S., it was way more comforting. And I think a lot of people are feeling really anxious, but like any harassment that she experienced was not anything comparable to what she had experienced in her native country. So I think in some ways people are really stressed out about it, but in certain circumstances it's like, well, this is way better than what I was seeing in my...
It could be a lot worse kind of thing.
When you live in stress, I guess less stress is a better thing.
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
Nancy, you focus on a couple of people in your stories. Let's talk about the most dramatic case that you presented.
Yeah, so Amber Winningham is a South St. Louis resident, and she walks her dog Gus every day. And she, the very day after the election, and she has not had an incident doing so. And she was walking her dog, and she looked up and saw and heard, kind of in a confusing moment, all at the same time, a man gutting his truck and swerving toward her, rolled down the window and said, "Trump's going to make sure all you dykes get killed." And she was terrified. Her dog almost took off running before she did, sensing the physical danger. And they ran four blocks home, and she called her wife and said, "Make sure you're careful coming home. You know, make sure you're the only one in the garage when you close the door." And, you know, just a very troubling incident. And so, to the point where now, I mean, three, 4 weeks? She still, you know, makes sure that she's pretty cautious now, Amber, when she, walks her dog.
Did she express this to you?
Yes, and we have a clip about that.
I think I'm being really cautious now. I don't go further than maybe 4 or 5 blocks from our house. I stick to roads that I know that people live on, that I'm friends with, just in case there's an issue, I can go to a neighbor's house.
Yeah, so she's really kind of narrowed her world a little bit there. And, that's what fear does.
This an isolated incident?
No. This was just a particularly dramatic one. And one person that just volunteered to tell her story, which she got a lot of kudos for, because many people are not telling their stories. Another is Jamie Heilman, who's a transgender woman and living in Alton. And she, a couple things. One, she received several calls the night of the election, as it became clear that Donald Trump would win, from other transgender people who were just very distraught about, you know, the specter of an administration that has, you know, documented LGBT, anti-LGBT policies. And she really didn't know what to tell them. And I said, well, what do you tell these people? Because, you know, things don't look bright if you just look at the facts. And I asked her that, and this is what she said. You can hear it in this clip.
I tell them to hang in there because there are people rooting for them, and that's true. And I can say that and feel good about it because I know that's true.
And that's all she can offer some people. Besides, there is a trans suicide hotline, which she can offer. I don't have that number with me, but I'll put it on the website. And she on Facebook is when she where she's had the trouble. So she put out a list of things that might happen to the LGBT population under what she thought under a Trump administration, and people wrote back things like, and using words that are very inappropriate, which you'll hear in a minute. Jamie Heilman, if you are indeed a tranny, why don't you just shoot yourself? No one would care.
Oh, it's just off. We have to take a break. We'll do that and come back and continue this conversation. We're talking about how various communities are reacting to the rhetoric of the recent political campaign and also to the election result itself. My guests in studio are Jenny Simone, the Diversity Fellow here at St. Louis Public Radio, and Nancy Fowler, Arts and Cultural Reporter. We'll be back in just a little bit. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue our conversation with Jenny Simone and Nancy Fowler of the St. Louis Public Radio staff. We are talking about the reaction in certain communities, actually the immigrant community and the LGBT communities, following the recent election cycle and, of course, the election of Donald Trump. Some people are concerned and some are not quite so concerned. That's what we're talking about. Jenny, we just heard Nancy talking about some of the awful incidents that she has reported on. Where do you want to pick up the story now?
As I move forward, I think that I want to find as many ways as I possibly can to reflect the very many nuances of how people feel within the immigrant community. Mm-hmm. I would like to talk about Manuel, who is retired from the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. He's a violinist. And I talked to him at the citizenship ceremony. He had just become a citizen. He was so excited to vote and to have his American passport. So now he can travel with a lot more ease than he could when he was just a resident. And he's super optimistic about what's coming up for the next administration.
It was a little bit scary. But I'm an optimistic person, so I believe that Donald Trump, I know that he's going to do whatever he wants to do, but I'm sure he's going to do the right things because he's going to be surrounded by the right people.
And he was born in Mexico, and he had expressed a lot of concern pre-election because of all the rhetoric about bad hombres and like all of these extra things about specifically about Mexican immigrants. I like to contrast him to Maribel, who is an undocumented mother that I talked to for a story a couple weeks ago, who was walking to the Schnucks on Gravoy with her daughter and was harassed by this man who told them to go back to Mexico, was like yelling at them across the parking lot. And she, you know, she makes a big point of telling her daughter to be super strong and this is her country because her daughter is a citizen. But she also faces those types of challenges every day. Her employer is a Republican who voted for Donald Trump, and she cleans his house. And right after the election, she went over there to work and he was like, "How are you doing?" And she was like, "I'm okay." And they had this conversation about, you know, she was saying how disappointed she was. And then she explains in this clip here in Spanish, and I'll explain after what she said.
Dijo, tú pelea por lo que tú crees. Y solo no apagues tu voz, no dejes de hablar español en público, no dejes de esforzarte. ¿Sabes qué? Me motivó. Dije, ah, carajo, o sea, si tú luchaste por lo que quieres, pues yo también voy a luchar por lo que quiero, ¿no?
So he encouraged her to not stop speaking in Spanish in public, to never stop fighting for what she believes in. She was like, you know what? That really motivated me that, like, if this guy is going to fight for his best interests, like, why wouldn't I continue to do that for myself? So I think even though people are facing a lot of stress and, like, whether that manifests in actual incidents of harassment or just feelings, they are pushing forward and trying to find the best in the situation. And I think that's a lot of people in the immigrant community.
You know, it brings a point that I guess most of us don't think about. You mentioned earlier that people were afraid, concerned about appearing in public in native garb, if you will, the hijab, whatever. But the idea of being overheard speaking another language can be just as inflammatory to some people who are against these
totally,
folks.
Totally, totally. Yeah. And it makes me, it stresses me out even just that, like, she happens to be undocumented and happens to be Mexican, and this man who doesn't know anything about them heard them speaking Spanish and said, go back to Mexico. And assuming that they are undocumented or that they don't belong here for some reason. And I think about that a lot when I'm reporting these stories, because I don't think we do a particularly good job, specifically with the Latino community, just representing their everyday lives. It's always when it's like immigrants or undocumented stuff. And I just, you know, when I try to find sources, it's like, I don't want everyone to think, oh yeah, all Latinos are undocumented or all Syrians are refugees or all. So trying to find ways to really broaden that understanding of how these communities are affected by the election and just living in St. Louis, period.
Right. Nancy, do you see parallels here with the group that we're talking about here, the LGBT group? I'm thinking in terms of presentation, the way people dress. I'm thinking particularly of transgender people who might somehow be singled out, who are in line, from what I understand, and for more animosity and more hate yeah. crimes than other members of this particular group, and also places where they gather.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, for some transgender people, it is difficult. Parents may be such that people aren't sure. And, you know, that's obviously an issue of the people that are trying to guess, and that it makes them uncomfortable. But yet it sets these people up, you know, as a target, not just for threats, but for all kinds of investigations that might reveal, for example, that the gender identity may not match up on every employment document. And so therefore, they can be fired if somebody looks too far into a situation. And then there's, of course, the whole restroom thing, where you literally may have nowhere to go. And just feeling, I mean, that being a physical problem, and also just feeling further marginalized by that. I mean, yeah, the issues are really different sometimes between the trans community and the other part of the LGBT community, of course. I mean, the trans community, that there are it is easier now than it used to be for people to get their gender identity changed on official documents because of executive orders by President Obama. But President
Trump. And how long are they going to last?
Right.
I mean, that's a big part of the conversation,
exactly.
Not to mention the Supreme Court potentially walking back gay marriage, for instance.
Right. And so that is a fear, not only because people won't be able to get married, but then their families won't be protected. Their children won't be parents, won't, you know, have two legal parents, because there's no way to join them legally in many cases. And it just sort of begins to unravel the progress that has been moved forward. So people have concerns that go, yes, it's about safety. Yes, it's also about medical practical matters. It's also about the atmosphere that just has emboldened a number of people to say things that, you know, are threatening and can lead to actual acts of violence.
Is it too early to be talking about a strategy by members of this community to deal with what could be ahead?
Well, I'll tell you what, Jamie Heimlin, who I interviewed, who had many horrible Facebook messages, many more than I even used in the story, about the person saying, you know, shoot yourself, no one would care. She had someone find out where that she does live in Alton and say some make a specific threat. And she now said, you know, I've never been a gun owner, never even considered it. But I tell you what, now it's something I have to think about, that my wife and I have to think about. And then after the story, in our comments section, several other trans people echoed that they'd never owned a gun. And maybe it's time to arm ourselves. And, you know, one mentioned that maybe there could become groups of specific LGBT gun owners. It's, you know, not a population that's, as a whole, been known for arming themselves, but, you know, they fear that they have fears and they have uncertainties about this time, so.
Jenny Simone, are you hearing anything along these lines with the members of the immigrant community, new citizens or otherwise?
You know, I wouldn't say, definitely not, at least specific to guns. I think you probably already have a lot of gun owners in the immigrant community, or just whatever the normal amount would be. But I do think that there is, I'm thinking specifically with DACA students, that uncertainty with what will happen with that program and how they'll be able to, will they be able to finish college? Will they be able to even enter university? Will they be able to get a license? All of those things that come with that program that are now sort of up in the air and trying to make contingency plans. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of immigration lawyers who don't have the answers, and that's sort of the worst place for these experts to be, where they don't, it's like, oh, I literally can't tell you what to prepare for because I don't know what the policy is going to be. So it's a lot of waiting, and it's a lot of sort of crossing your fingers and hoping that things can't change immediately.
That is so echoed in the LGBT community, that uncertainty. You know, we have this now. Will we keep having it? You know, will we have things that are worse? We thought we were prepared to kind of go on and live our lives, at least with what we have, and, you know, who knows?
It's very, very early in the game. A lot of questions yet to be answered. I want to thank you both so much for being with us and discussing this. Jenny Simone, thank you.
Thank you
for your reporting. Nancy Fowler, same to you. Thank you for your great reporting.
Thank you, Don.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.